You are listening to KPTZ 91.9 FM in Port Townsend. Welcome to Book Lovers Cafe. Book Lovers Cafe is a program of author interviews and book reviews from around the sound and beyond. I'm your host, Chris Wilson, and you can listen every Wednesday after 5 o'clock and on alternate Sundays at 12:30. Today, I am very pleased to introduce an author and teacher and world traveler, Richard Friedrichs. Richard has recently moved back to Port Townsend area, and with him, he brings his new book, Windhorse Warrior. I think this is going to be of special interest to our listeners here. Windhorse Warrior offers an inside look at the struggles and aspirations of the Tibetan people during the 1950s. It is a tale that weaves together the politics of occupation and resistance and the otherworldly romance between a Chinese communist and an educated Tibetan woman. It has the soaring vision of the Tibetan spiritual heart. See, I told you were going to like it. Welcome, Richard. Thanks for coming in today.
Well, thank you for inviting me.
Okay, so I like to begin with just you reading a little excerpt from the book because I think it really gives the flavor of the theme and the majesty of the place you're writing about.
Okay. Are you ready? I asked, more to myself than to Chestnut, my horse. Because I have a good feeling about this new adventure. Let's go. When Chestnut and I rejoined the main trail, she began to run as if responding to my excitement. But in reality, I think she wanted to catch up to the other festival goers who had left Gyawa before us. I slowed her down after a while and we walked at an even pace. I wanted to enjoy this temporary solitude, this gap between my experiences in calm so far and those yet to come. I enjoyed the sights, smells, and sounds of this valley, heightened by my sense of freedom from responsibilities. I began to drift into a daydream about taking the revolution all the way to the heart of Tibet in Lhasa. There was so much to accomplish in the future. I sincerely believed this next adventure would get me closer to fulfilling Jiachen's wish to liberate her people, and I was at last entering her ancestral homeland. Surely that was what she had said. She wanted me to liberate her people. Full of these mindscapes, I wasn't aware that Chestnut wandered off the trail to graze in the lush meadow. The grass tickling her nose made her snort, and I was startled. Suddenly I saw I was no longer on the trail. I laughed at myself, and instead of leading Chestnut back to the trail, I dismounted and let her continue grazing. It was a beautiful meadow. I took the opportunity to stretch my legs. Chestnut had chosen well. I watched Chestnut graze. The grass she was eating was green and so alive with vitality. I walked around, the grass swishing and curling around my feet and at calves. Hearing the roar of a river nearby, I went to watch the water tumble over rocks. I looked up at the forest on the hillsides above and watched trees dancing to the rhythm of the wind. Gradually, I felt a deep humming enter my body from the ground, as if the earth herself were singing with pleasure. And with a waft of fragrance and dazzling brightness, I was enfolded in an immense feminine presence.
You were listening to Book Lovers Cafe, and that was our guest, Richard Friedrichs. He was reading from his book, Windhorse Warrior. So, Richard, tell us about how your early life and interests led to the eventual writing of this book. How do they relate?
I was fortunate enough to grow up in the Himalayan mountains. My father was a pioneering doctor who set up medical work in Nepal in the early 50s. From age five, I was living both in Nepal, and later when I went to boarding school at age nine, I was in the mountains of northern India, in a place called Mussoorie, north of of Delhi. Mm-hmm. In both places, we had fabulous views of the snow mountains that separated the plains of India and the lower Himalayan mountains and the Tibetan Plateau. And I used to always wonder what was on the other side of those mountains.
Mm-hmm. Well, so what was the specific inspiration for this story? And tell us about what a Windhorse Warrior is, too.
A Windhorse Warrior, I'll begin with that, is, if you're familiar with the Tibetan Buddhist concept of a bodhisattva, somebody who selflessly gives them their lives to the happiness of other people and relieving their suffering, basically working for the common good of everyone. So that's what the concept of warrior in Tibet is, more of this kind of a warrior than it is somebody with, you know, a gun or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Or a spear.
Or a spear or a bow and arrow. Mm-hmm. And the wind horse comes from a design on prayer flags, which is usually a horse. And the idea is that this horse, when it's on a prayer flag, when the wind blows it, it also symbolizes basic goodness. So whenever the wind carries, wherever the wind carries this, the messages on the flag, it blesses the world with goodness.
And the threads come off the flag, yeah. And off go, yeah, all the good wishes.
Right.
I'll have to look at my prayer flag more closely, mm-hmm, now to see, yeah, that horse. Wonderful. So tell us about your own experiences in Tibet. It seems like you were able to eventually travel to that wonderful place.
Yeah, I was a teacher in Hong Kong, which was close enough to Tibet where I could take students for a one-week experience that the school offered, usually in March.
Were these because these were Chinese students or international?
A lot of them are Chinese students, but they have nationalities from everywhere. We, mm-hmm, had also European and Australian students. So it was a very international school. So I would take them to Chengdu, which is right on the edge of Tibet in Sichuan province. And then we'd get in a caravan of five or six four-wheel drive vehicles and go on up into the mountains and onto the Tibetan Plateau. Now, the eastern part of the Tibetan Plateau where we went is actually very forested. Mm-hmm. You don't usually think of that as Tibet, but the eastern part of the plateau is quite green. So they have mountains with forests all over them, evergreens mostly. And then the valleys are quite wide and fertile. So there's also lots of grasslands too.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the area that we went to.
So when I was reading the book, I could really feel the setting because you have firsthand experience with being in these villages, mm-hmm, being with the people, know what they eat, how they talk and converse,
yeah,
and that brings such a great reality to this story, even though many parts of it are surreal in a way or very spiritual. So let's get to the characters. First, Chang Wei-min. Why did you choose a privileged Chinese man to be your protagonist?
I think there are two influences there. One was a Chinese tour guide that I had. He was actually very pro-Chinese, or pro-Tibetan,
mm-hmm,
even though he was Chinese. He loved Tibet, and he loved the people. So he was kind of one of the role models. The other was that I was surrounded all the time by privileged Chinese guys,
mm-hmm,
and I was able to sort of model Chuang's background on their lives in Hong Kong, which is, you know, 60 years later, I suppose, from Chuang's day. But anyway, you know, a lot of parallels.
Mm-hmm. And then it also gives attention to the story.
Yeah.
That he is a very zealous pro-communist figure.
Very, very idealistic.
Yes, and he's very idealistic, yeah, and believes in pure Marxism.
Right.
And then he arrives And it becomes involved with, you know, the spiritualism of Tibet.
Yep.
So that's a beautiful theme of the story of how these two mix.
Mm-hmm. I was also met lots of Chinese people while we were in Tibet who were living at monasteries, and they'd abandoned, you know, their corporate lives in Beijing and Shanghai.
Oh,
and
really?
And were now living as monks in Tibet. So there are a lot of people in China who you want to get away from it all.
Mm-hmm. So instead of going to Alaska.
So they're going to Alaska or dropping out or whatever.
Right.
They go to a monastery in Tibet.
Uh-huh. Were you able to go into a lot of monasteries yourself?
Yes.
Uh-huh. And how did they seem to you? What were your impressions of the people there and what they're like now?
I don't know if we would get the same experience of a monastery now as we mm-hmm. would back, you know, when I wrote the story.
Right, in the 50s.
Because they're really quite controlled in what they're able to do.
Mm-hmm.
And I only came across one monastery where they were actually doing, a worship program. But most of the
with
time we went...
With long periods of meditation.
Yeah, so that was only once. And that was at a nunnery. So a lot of nuns sitting around playing drums and chanting, and mm-hmm. it was very beautiful.
Well, that leads into my next question mm-hmm. really well. There is a very strong feminist theme embodied in this book in the characters of Deshen mm-hmm. and the grandmother Yangchen and Dawa. Did you meet women such as these in your Asian travels?
Yeah. Growing up in Nepal and in where I went to school in India, there were lots of Tibetan refugees that I met. I remember one lady who sold Tibetan artifacts in Missouri, where I went to school. She was a very strong, capable woman. We stayed at a guest house when we went into Tibet often. And that lady, I think I modeled Dechen after her.
Mm-hmm.
She had been a professional singer in Chengdu, singing Tibetan songs and dancing and entertaining Chinese audiences mostly. And then she took the money she'd earned for there and built a very nice guest house in Tibet, in her hometown, right along the road. And she was very strong, very spiritual person. In fact, one of our teachers from Hong Kong decided that she was going to go and spend, you know, she spent about 6 weeks with her at the guest house, learning Tibetan and teaching Doma, her name was, English, mm-hmm. so she could relate to tourists and so on. So they really developed a really good friendship.
Mm-hmm. We're talking to Richard Friedrichs. He's the author of Windhorse Warriors. This is Book Lovers Cafe, and I'm your host, Chris Wilson. And this is KPTZ, of course. And so we'll go on talking to Richard about his book. And now the setting. The setting mm-hmm. is, there are so many special and beautiful scenes that are well off the beaten track of most tourists. So the villages, the river valleys, the high plateaus. Did you imagine them? Are they actual places? Tell us about how you wrote about these places.
When I was in Nepal one time, I met a Tibetan refugee who had been involved in the Tibetan resistance movement in northern Nepal. And he was telling me about his nephew, who was one of the leaders up there, and about their ancestral home in eastern Tibet. He gave me the name of it. And I remember that name, and I talked to my tour guide when we were up in Tibet about this the first time I went in. And so he did a little research, and he found it.
Oh.
So all the places I mentioned in the book, Litang, Yawa, Mola, are actual places, so I was able to describe them by going there myself.
Mm-hmm. That's wonderful. That's wonderful. Okay. So, and then you told me once that you were trekking or went through the mm-hmm. Annapurna Valley as a teenager. How did yeah. that influence you?
Yeah, that was a kind of a turning point for me, introduction to the Tibetan culture. When you travel up the Kali Gandaki River, you have to pass through a deep gorge between the Annapurna Range and the Dalagiri Range. And the river goes through at about 6,000 feet. And either side, those two mountains are 26,000 feet. And so that's the deepest gorge on the planet above sea level anyway. So the river cuts from the Tibetan plateau right through this mountain range. And at that point where the gorge is the narrowest, you suddenly turn north. The river is flowing east-west that when you approach the Annapurna Range and Dalagiri Range. And it's forested. There's lots of greenery. And then suddenly when you turn the corner and start going north, the valley opens up really wide and it's very dry and arid. It's also very windy. The wind blows through there every day really, really hard. And so, and then also you see stupas and prayer flags, and suddenly you are on the Tibetan plateau. You're in Tibet, and the culture is just changes just like that within mm-hmm. a few miles. Mm-hmm. It's amazing.
Mm-hmm. And you also had some interaction or influence by the Dalai Lama when you were young as well.
Yes. Oh, Mussoorie is the first place that the Dalai Lama lived when he came to India in 1959. And within, I think, a couple months of his arrival, he visited our school. And I can safely say our school was his first international audience.
Mm-hmm.
And he made a big impression on me that time. And of course, we heard the story of the Tibetan refugees and what was happening in China and why he was in India. And from that point on, my whole life has been involved in learning more and more about that. And so I think the book is a result of that encounter when I was 12 years old,
mm-hmm.
I think.
A very important time in yeah. a person's life, especially to form their spiritual awakening mm-hmm. at that time. So a lot of this book, the Buddhist Lama, Paul Den Rinpoche, and Dechen look to the legend of King Gizar, I'm hoping I'm saying that correctly, of Ling, mm-hmm. to inspire the people of calm on the eastern plateau of Tibet. And not very many people, I don't think, know very much about this legend. Mm-hmm. And so can you tell us the story?
Yeah, it's an epic poem from Central Asia. It was popular in Mongolia and in Tibet. So Gesar was born to a king who was kind of a weak man, and his wife was barren. So he had an heir with a servant girl. And the queen, when Gesar was born, the queen was so jealous, and so was the king's younger brother, that they conspired to get rid of this boy. But even from the time of his birth, he had magical powers, and they were never able to trap him and kill him. And finally, they exiled Gesar and his mother to the wilderness. And the wilderness happened to be the wide-open grassland, and they lived like nomads. So when Gesar came of age, about 15 or 16, he was visited by the goddess, who told him he had a sacred mission in his life, and that there were treasures, gifts available to him. So his first gift was a magical horse, and then other gifts were like magical weapons and armor and wealth of all kinds. So taking his horse and his and these gifts with him, he goes back to Ling. When he arrives in Ling, he discovers his father's away on pilgrimage, and his uncle has decided that whoever wins a horse race, which is rigged for his benefit probably, will become the king of Ling and marry the most beautiful girl in Ling. So Gesar arrives as this race is about to start, and he enters and wins. He becomes king of Ling, marries this beautiful girl, and then the rest of the story is about his conquests of demonic forces or tribes or however you want to look at it, north, south, east, and west, all the way around. And some people say that he expanded his kingdom to all of Tibet, and that he encountered, in the west, he encountered Persian or Turkic tribes. And because of that, he was given the name Kaiser.
Oh.
Which turned into Gesar, which is also related to Caesar.
Okay, so you, being very familiar with the story, use this a little bit as a framework for your own tale, and of course, weaving in the history of the 1950s. So if people are more interested and want to find out more about this time, what other books can they go to?
There's a book called The Warrior Song of King Gesar by Douglas Pinnock, which is a great short version of this. The Epic of King Gesar, published by Shambhala, is probably the most comprehensive. It's finally being written down now.
So Westerners can find out more about it through looking up those books.
One thing I'd like to say about Gesar is that he was all for freedom from the state. He didn't set up a state like communist China wanted to set up a state in Tibet. So I've used the legend from that point of view, too. The cooperatives and everything that Chuang wanted to do was more locally oriented, and they wanted to be free of all the influences from, you know, those people far away in Beijing.
And the struggle goes on.
Yeah.
Well, join me next time, everyone, to learn more about books and authors. I'm your host, Chris Wilson, and you can listen to past shows and other programs from the podcast page on the website at kptz.org. Today, we were talking to Richard Friedrichs about his book, Windhorse Warriors, and that will be available at our local bookstore, Writer's Workshop, and also online. I'd like to thank Jacob Brown, who's our engineer, and Carl Allen, who's our editor, who smooths out all the rough edges. Thank you to all the volunteers and supporters who make this wonderful radio station possible. We'll see you next time.